Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch.
Everybody to Fantasy Football Tonight. I'm your host, Todd, your good friend, and of course, I'm joining you for yet another fantastic episode of Fantasy Football Tonight with your, with of course, me and Mr. R.C. Rizzo, who will be joining us shortly. The numbers don't lie, by the way, Mr. R.C. Rizzo. If I don't call him by his full name, his lawyers get after me. This is probably the biggest show of the year for us. I think last week's show was the second biggest show because it's kind of like the last real week before you draft, show before you draft, you know, for the last week of the season, preseason. But now we go into the opening season. And before RC comes waltzing in here, which I know he will in a second, I'm going to go on my little monologue. And first of all, by the way, since this is a most important show, we're going to try to get to everything, and we're going to obviously go, I'm sure, 15 minutes or so over the regular time schedule. I want to say this. If I haven't gotten all your emails, I've been just unloaded with week one emails. If I have not gotten all of your email requests, I will get them all. It's obviously still early in the week. Don't be afraid to still send them. I'm always there to help you guys either through Facebook or email todd@fantasyfootballtonight.com. One of the questions I was asked, perplexing question I was asked, is why don't you guys talk more about DFS? And in case some of you guys don't know, that's Daily Fantasy Sports. For a while, I was like, what do they keep calling a daily DFS for? Why are they, you know, but that was, you know, months ago. Anyhow, Daily Fantasy Sports, what am I talking about anymore? Well, here's the reason why I don't mention it more. Because to me, it doesn't matter. Do I play it? Yes, I do. I do play it. But as far as we're concerned, the show goes week to week anyway. So we're going to give you the advice on who we think you should start for the week. And you can use that on a DFS platform. Or you can use it on a regular, you know, regular season-long platform. I was listening to Sirius Radio where they were talking about, you know, they were doing their crossover draft, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, when they say it's the best of the best, it's not the best of the best. Because if it was the best of the best, guys like I would be in there. And that's perfect English right there. Guys like I would be in there. So it's not the best of the best. And RC would be in there. I mean, I've seen RC absolutely just mop up experts, including myself, and just dominate in whatever he touches. And so when they say it's the best of the best, it's not really quite the best of the best. You guys, a little crossover, a little league you're doing. It's really the best of the best you guys have on Sirius Radio, which is kind of, you know, not, you know, really always the best of the best. So, if it, you know, so I would, you know, and of course I do play in expert leagues, and I prove my point year in, year out. I got two great ones. I'm in Evan Silva's Fantasy Sports Writers Association League. Thrilled about that one. Thrilled because I get a chance to take on Evan Silva and some other great writers. I'm going to keep RC on mute because I'm about to blast him. You guys have heard me do this before. You know, when you produce the show, you can control what RC says. For a limited amount of time, I control. Anyhow, I'm just joking. I'm not going to blast him. The other expert leagues I'm involved in, of course, are RC's two fantastic leagues, which we have talked about throughout the preseason, of which I've been in for years, and I've only won it once. So it's an absolutely filthy league, especially Smitty. From Fantasy Football Extreme just annoys the crap out of me because he always pounds me. I just know when I play him. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell RC this. RC, I'm going to tell you this right to your face. When I saw Smitty drafting, when he was drafting, I took light up. I put attention onto it because every year I go, what is he doing? And every year he just owns me. Except for last year, obviously. I kind of got the better of him. But he does own me. Anyhow, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, I was just kind of talking about, you know, I get questions in the email about why we don't focus on daily fantasy sports. And I kind of explained right before you got in that to us, it's not really a different thing. To us, it's, you know, it's we're weekly anyway. So if you want to take our advice and put it towards a daily format, by all means, do that. But we don't focus on it. And then I want to get your take on maybe you want to be a little stronger worded about that. You can if you want to, if you have personal feelings about it. But I also mentioned that on Sirius Radio, they were doing some kind of big old fancy 14-team crossover league where they had seven DFS experts and seven season-long experts. And I'm doing the quotation marks here, you know, because, I mean, who's an expert? I don't even think, you know, are we? I don't know. I hate using that term. But they advertise it as the best of the best. And I'm like, come on. Come on, RC. If they're the best of the best, who would be in that league? We would. These guys. So clearly it's not the best of the best. So, but I'm sure it's going to be a very fun competitive league. But they were talking about how there's like a war going on, like an undertoning, you know, behind-the-scenes battle going on between DFS experts who really are very algorithm-driven and very statistic-driven because they're almost like little math nerds at Harvard writing on the wall, you know, or at MIT, excuse me, writing on the blackboard and then running away, and then all of a sudden they win $1 million. And then there's a season-long guy, so you have to really be in it. You can't just use algorithms, and you gotta be able to put together a strategy that lasts 16 weeks. Give me your take on that before we get into the big show, the biggest show of the year, because I get too peppered with that question, and I want your feelings on the DFS versus season-long and, you know, what you think of it.
I don't know. I'm not sure this so much of a leap from fantasy football as has always been played traditionally, and then this new, you know, variation or mutation of daily fantasy leagues. I think when you apply that to baseball, it is extremely different because baseball was, you know, certainly, you know, fantasy baseball was very leisurely and it was over a very long period of time. Then, you know, when that transitioned into daily, that turned into a whole different game. But I'm not sure that happens with football because football has always been a, you know, like you said, it's a, you know, once a week thing. And in that week, each week is very important and requires like the same analysis as you would apply to a daily game, which is really just breaking that up 17 times. But we've always done that from week to week. I think one thing that, and I'm sure like the guys that are really into the daily thing, even as applied to football, to me, and this was something I was going to begin working on, is we're mostly concerned with like team situations you're very good at, you know, analyzing kind of like the utility of a player in a certain scheme and team situation. And I'm more focused on kind of the talent level of the players, sometimes ignoring to my detriment the team situation. But I think when you get to the daily version of this game, the thing that you really want to maybe apply, and once again, the guys that are heavily into this and are good at it probably do this, is really the variance associated with players. So, like, basically the confidence interval that you can expect a player's performance to stay within, and mostly concerning the upper and the lower bounds. So there are certain players where, you know, you can – that have a lot of variation, but they also have a big upside. And when you basically compare that to what their salaries are in a given week – you know, that becomes a more appealing option. Then there are players that are very steady and then, you know, also have like a high mean performance. Those are the guys that are always going to have the high salaries. But I think when you can pinpoint really those speculative players that have like the higher bounds and a lot of variation, those are the guys that you might want to take a chance on in relation to what their salaries are in these games. And once again, I mean, if we were going to go in this direction, I mean, that would be the way that I would steer us. And being that you don't like math, I think you would just go along for the ride.
Whoa, I love math. Time out. First of all, in my book, 1 + 1 does not always equal 2. It's subjective. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, listen, the one problem that I have with DFS is just simply that there's really a lot of luck involved. I mean, it's like for example, I'll give you this example. You know, say you're 7-1 in your league and you're playing a 1-17, okay? And wow, I mean, your team just has a bad day, and his team just has a pretty darn good day, and you lose, and you go to 7-2, he goes to 2-7. You know, you go off and, you know, go to the playoffs and do, you know, do whatever you do, and he fades away. But he got that win, and you wonder, how did he get that win? And it's just like, that's just, he had all the luck he needed, and you just, you know, had some bad luck. That's why I always say it's 90% luck. That luck isn't always good, and it's always bad. But, you know, that's the problem that I have with DFS, is that when you go in week by week, you know, it's in, especially if you're playing, like, you know, 20 people or 30 people, you know, the more you dilute the league, the more you dilute the availability to have good luck. And, you know, and your skill, albeit will be awesome, but your skill is somewhat limited by, you know, like I said, by the salaries of the players. And, I mean, I find myself, I mean, I do it all the time. Soon I've won a few times. I haven't won anything big. But when I do win, it's, you know, it first of all, I mean, it doesn't make a difference to me. I just play more for the fun. But when I do well, it's because I feel like, you know, I win, I said, oh, my God, I have like $3,000 left. I mean, what am I going to get for my flex guy? You know, and even if I have that much left, that would be great, to be honest with you. You know, and I end up getting some scrub. I don't know, what's a good scrub? How about Brandon Marshall from the New York Jets, okay? I'm just kidding. That was to poke fun at you. But I'm just like, you know, I to me, it's not exactly, it's more of a numbers game. And maybe that's why you do love it, is that it really comes down to, I mean, have you not heard what some of these people do? They, like, sit down there and they devise, like, computer programs to determine what the best roster will be for the money value they have. And it kind of takes the, you know, the analysis out of it when you're just simply plugging in numbers to a program, RC.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm kind of referring to. So, I mean, luck is, you know, a big part of luck. You can also, the synonym for that is variation. So, and that's why I'm saying that really to play in these games where, you know, because everything boils down to the odds of something happening. So, like, for the simplest example is, like, when you flip a coin, you have a 50% chance of either outcome. So when you go into these games, you know, essentially abiding by, the, you know, their salary schemes, obviously there's a design to those salary schemes where, once again, the higher salary players have the highest mean performance, and then they have also normally the lowest variation, meaning they're more of a short thing, that they're going to be higher than average than comparable players. So the trick to this, to me, is really – like you're saying, and I'm sure that some of these computer programs do this, where you want to try to target the players with the high upper bounds. They have a lot of variation, and therefore they also have lower salaries. But the trick is really to tilt the odds in your favor by basically picking these players that, although they have lower salaries because their mean performance is not that good in relation to other players, the upper boundaries of the possibilities of their performance is higher than the normal player. So, you know, like, for example, take, like, Vernon Davis last year. His mean performance was absolutely atrocious, right? But when you go back in the history of Vernon Davis, the upper boundary of his performance is actually quite high. Now, they didn't work last year because he never broke out of his new mediocre to absolutely abysmal performance. But, you know, by the end of the year, Vernon Davis probably had a pretty low salary, and that was well warranted. But, you know, say that you hit that week where, yeah, he's kind of going along at, you know, 4 points a week or whatever he's doing. But you know in his history, and then built into, like, some algorithm, that the upper boundary of what he could do and has done in the past is really 18 points a week. And you play him at a low salary, and sure enough, that week he gets back to 18 points. That's how you're tilting the odds back in your favor. So that's what those algorithms are purporting to do, I would imagine. You know, and then there's probably more complicated things that look at, you know, the possibility of hailstorms and all kinds of crazy things that probably don't matter. So,
no, Def. I mean, you know, listen, it's you're absolutely right about it. And, you know, and to me, that kind of sucks a little bit of the fun out of it when you're just mostly focusing on the, you know, you know, as a set, because the salaries obviously fluctuate. If you don't really know, they fluctuate throughout the, you know, throughout the week, so depending on the performance the week before, guys can go up or down. You know, but that being, with that being said, you know, now you're not looking for, you know, really just the best team. You're looking for, you know, the best single day performance. And I mean, hey, you know, for example, you know, I just have the best tight end example, but Heath Miller, you know, he's going to catch probably 6-7 touchdowns this year. So what your job is going to be with all the best, you know, number, you know, jumbling that you can do and, you know, and algorithm generating that you could possibly imagine, you need to find out when he's going to get those touchdowns because, you know, his value is probably going to be lower than most tight ends and you could sneak in and if you get that touchdown out of him, that's great. As opposed to paying for, you know, like your Gronkowski or a Graham or one of those higher end, you know, Martellus Bennett type tight ends, you know, you pay for a lower guy, you get the touchdown. Hey, you happen to get the week, you got 2 catches for 15 yards and a touchdown. Awesome. You know, or you get the Furia, you know. I mean, in one league, I think I'm not even joking with you. For one of my leagues I'm in to start the season, I picked Coon, you know, the fullback for the Green Bay Packers. And it's just like, because, you know, the guy scores touchdowns, you know, with how beat up the Packers are, you know, why not? I mean, it's you know, and that was the flex guy because I was, like, down for so low on money, I put John Coon in there. So it's just, that's just kind of how you play. And to me, it's interesting. It's a growing market. You know, it's exciting. But I still am old school, and I'm gonna stick, you know, for the most part with the season long because I think it proves, you know, these guys who win – you know, $100,000, whatever, in a fantasy, you know, in a fantasy football daily league, they don't tell you how many times they lose. And, you know, and I'm coming from Vegas, okay? You know I live in Vegas, RC. I mean, you haven't been down here yet, but you know that, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay, so, like, you know, my mom, she's a lifelong gambler. She's one of those old women who go to the casinos and gamble on Friday, Saturday nights, whatever. She never tells me when she loses. She never does. She tells me when she wins, though. You know, oh my God, Todd, I won $200, won $500. And, you know, but that's so rare. I know she goes 3 times a week, and I hear from her maybe once a month. So how many times these guys lose? You know, so, I mean, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, what it's worth, worthwhile to it, and especially when you're in a competition. I'm not kidding, RC. I'm looking at one of the competitions they have, like 20,000 people for, like, that $10 million competition on DraftKings. I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, you know, that's like winning the lottery. You know, to get through that with the best possible team, you know, and of course, you know, to break all the tiebreakers, I'm sure several teams are going to be picked exactly the same. Anyhow, that's enough time spent on that. So that was I got peppered with some of those questions, and so, you know, take our advice, ask the questions, you know, according to your daily fantasy leagues, and we'll certainly help you out with that. But RC, let's move on to the, you know, we have a lot of injury updates as practices have gotten underway. And we do have a huge game tomorrow that we're going to cover, massive game tomorrow between the Steelers and the Patriots for the opening game of the season. But let's first of all get to some of these injuries, and then we're going to get on to some of those player movements that everyone's going crazy about on the waiver wire, and there's two in particular I want to talk about. But let's start with, you know, why don't you open up with LeSean McCoy and Randall Cobb. Get people with the latest update on those two guys.
Well, it's looking better for McCoy, actually. He's obviously been held out for an extended period of time with his leg injury, but it's looking more favorable in terms of him actually being ready to go against the Colts. So he basically, you know, did participate in practice on Tuesday. Would you feel absolutely safe to start him this week? Not completely, but certainly it's looking a lot better. And, you know, LeSean himself is pretty confident that he's going to be able to play. So I've got him in a couple of leagues, and I'm still on the fence as to whether or not to start him, but because I have some pretty good options, and I'm not really sure what's going to happen in Buffalo. You know, all signs point to him possibly having, you know, a bigger role than he did, you know, last year. So he should be very productive, but you just never know. So, you know, for a player like LeSean, if you don't really have a close option, then, you know, then you definitely want to stick him in your lineup. But if you got something, that you're just more sure of than you might be best to stay away?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this about it. You know, I mean, it's first of all, we have several more days of him to get healthy, several more days of practice reports. So, you know, obviously, you need to cross that bridge on Saturday. But and this is going to be the theme throughout the show, RC, is my week one strategy. My week one strategy is completely different from the other 12 regular season weeks in most leagues, 14 in some other, or 13 in some others, is that, you know, the strategy for week one is, you know, you kind of have to, what did Jerry Cantrell say in Jerry Maguire? He said you got to hang your balls out. It's a fun week. First of all, you know, and I'll get back to the LeSean McCoy thing. Number one, you have to, and this is why I'm saying
before you go on, you know, there was a lot of memorable quotes from Jerry Maguire, and I, if you had to create like a list, that's probably like 178. So congratulations on you finding the most obscure, unquotable quote in that entire movie. But sorry for the interruption.
The who? The her? Clearly, you're not an Allison Chains fan, because this is when he walked in with his manuscript. When he had the manuscript, and he goes to the Kinko's, and it's the copy guy. That's Jerry Cantrell of Allison Chains. And he hands it back to him, and he goes, sometimes, man, you just got to, that's how you got to do. You got to hang your balls out, which is kind of what he did to make music. But no, you're right. I mean, show me the money. You had me at hello, RC. But that's beside the point, okay? Here's the point by hanging your balls out. I have always said this. I talked about this the last couple of years, you know, where, you know, teams get like almost a month to really prepare for the first game of the season. I mean, you know, deep down inside of practice, they're practicing all the plays they're going to throw. And so the teams that you think are going to be really bad, they really don't look as bad week one. That's why you have all these wacky things go on in week one and upsets in week one and just, you know, player domination that you will say, whoa, I mean, Marcus Wheaton caught four touchdowns. That's an absolute joke. I'm not saying that. You know, I can just see, you know, someone like TC going, here's a quote from Todd, you know, Marcus Wheaton caught four touchdowns. No, it's not going to happen. All right, TC, calm down. But anyhow, it's about, what am I trying to say here? It's about finding the difference between week one and week 2 through 13 and exploiting it. And that's why it's like you just got to say, hey, listen, man, I'm going to put my guys out there. Number one, you're going to play LeSean McCoy. As long as he's going to play, as long as he's questionable and above, you got to play him. And basically, you got to pull out some of those smaller guys and say, like, for example, I do not recommend, this is from a purely speculative standpoint, starting Drew Brees week one again at Arizona against the Cardinals. We'll talk about that a little later, but I would rather go with a guy who's gonna, like a Derek Carr. You know, it's crazy bet. You know, if you have to make this decision, I mean, I have these two guys on three different teams, and right now my choice is gonna be I would rather have Derek Carr going against a far weaker defense than have Drew Brees opening the season on a wild week one, you know, in Arizona against, you know, Patrick Peterson in a somewhat brutal defense, as opposed to having Derek Carr going to be at home playing against really a somewhat soft defense of the Cincinnati Bengals. So, but I would not do that, like, say, week 3, 4, 5, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. But week one, crazier things have happened, RC. But we're going to get more into that. Let's get more into that, you know, in a minute. But that's why I say, whatever you do, start LeSean McCoy. You got to go with your bangers week one. As long as he's not limping, start him.
Yeah, but I understand your point, but you just kind of contradicted that point by saying you would start Carr over Brees. And the other thing to be careful about with hamstring injuries is that, you know, sure, he might start, but it might be 10 plays in, and then all of a sudden he's on the bench. You know what I mean? So that's why if you got a close enough option – then, you know, and he's listed as questionable, then I would stay away because we really haven't seen him yet this year. If he's listed as probable, then I agree with you. Then you go with him. Now, on the issue of, like, Carr versus Brees, I'm surprised that – I mean, we both love Carr this year, and I was far more likely to draft Carr than Drew Brees. As a matter of fact, I don't have Drew Brees in any leagues at all. But – I think if you in a situation where you've got both of them, and I understand the point about on the road against And by the way, I'm not so sure if Cincinnati's defense is easy. It's maybe not as good as Arizona, but it's awfully damn close. So I don't see the real advantage except for maybe the home field advantage. I mean, you're talking about Derek Carr, second-year quarterback with a lot of question marks still, versus Hall of Famer Drew Brees, who's not Peyton Manning. Now, Peyton Manning was another guy I didn't draft at all, and I would start Derek Carr over him because he is – by the way, I don't know if you've heard or followed what Peyton Manning has been doing in the preseason, but it's been pretty ugly. So that's a guy that, you know, you reach a certain kind of like age plateau, and then after that, the drop-off could be swift and brutal, and it could be rapidly approaching that point for Peyton Manning. So I think you need to be careful with him. But anyway, on the point of Brees versus Carr, I would have to disagree. I'd probably go with Brees this week.
Well, let me say two things. I didn't really contradict myself. I didn't actually complete my sentence because it's my bad. First of all, you got LeSean McCoy going up against the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I know the Indianapolis Colts are a somewhat improved defense. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say brutally improved, but from last year, just about any team's going to get better no matter what. So, but you have them, and I believe it's in Buffalo. Am I not mistaken about that? It is, in fact, in Buffalo. So you got McCoy making his first appearance in front of the new home crowd. He's going to want to, you know, look good. I mean, that's what players want to do. And he's going up against a team that not only is one that he can own, a defense that he can own, but then he's going against Andrew Luck on the other side of the ball. And I know Buffalo's got a great defense. I actually kind of always love the Bills. They just fade so quickly. God, I wish they would stay in it. But it's just that I believe that Andrew Luck is going to, you know, now this could be one of those, hey, this could be one of those weeks where Andrew Luck throws no touchdowns, no 180 yards, nothing else, because it's freak week one. Let's call it that, freak week one. And let it be. But if it goes the way it's supposed to go, Andrew Luck's going to open up a lead against this Bills team, and that's going to make LeSean McCoy have to catch more passes out of the backfield, which I think is probably a little bit better for his hamstring than him, you know, trying to ground pound out, you know, runs on the ground, you know, and really torquing, putting a lot of torque on those hammies. It's probably better if he's catching one in the flat and just running out of bounds. So I like his point producing ability, but you're right, there is an injury risk, you know, but you didn't take him in the late second, early third round RC for nothing. So, but let's see. Let's see where he's at Saturday. You know what the good thing is, RC? I don't own him in one league, so it's not my problem. Your problem. Not mine. Okay, let's move on. But that's what I'm going to – and on the Brees one, I didn't say for sure I was doing that, but I'm pretty much leaning that way. At least – you know, and again, you got to look at your competitors. I mean, there's a couple leagues where I have Drew Brees in where I really am overpowering the opponent. And there's one in there that I'm not. So that's where I would say, you know, I'm going to go with the Carr thing here because, I mean, RC, listen, man, I mean, we've seen it every year, these massive – week one performances, and everyone's out grabbing Michael Crabtree, caught three touchdowns. Michael Crabtree's catching three touchdowns. No, I didn't. I'm using that as an example. You know, and Derek Carr throws five touchdowns, and then everybody's trading for Derek Carr, and all of a sudden he costs $8,000 on the fan. No, I'm just saying that could, you know, you could see these surprise performances. And one that I see is the Oakland Raiders coming out and looking good against Cincinnati, and you know Cincinnati's going to pour it on their defense. So you know Carr is going to be passing the majority of the game. This is not going to be Latavius or they like to call him Lat Murray, you know, big day. This is going to be more of a Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, welcome to the show, and Michael Crabtree and, you know, Rivera and all those guys are going to be heavily involved in that game. So I just think that's one of the wild card games that you can put a little attention to. But let's switch the focus over to the Green Bay Packers. Because this is a team, first of all, we're going to get the update on Cobb right now, but we also have some other updates, including the free agency market with James Jones rejoining the team. But how's Randall Cobb looking, RC?
Randall Cobb, I wouldn't have any worries about him. It's looking very, very likely that he is going to be playing. And, you know, they have a pretty good matchup against Chicago, even though it's in Chicago. So I would feel very confident starting Cobb. He basically his injury was it was a just basically a sprain of a joint in his shoulder. So it was really nothing serious, and as it's looking now, he's probable to play Sunday, so you shouldn't have to worry about him.
You know what, RC, we got a phone call.
Do you want to answer it? It might be a mistake.
I know. We're going to take it. We're going to take it.
What, maybe it's someone just selling a magazine subscriptions?
It could be. It's if Blog Talk Radio lets me take it. All right, 609.
They're trying to raise money for the big jamboree.
Are you trying to raise money? Is this a raffle ticket call?
No, guys, this is Jersey and a half. How could you not take a call from 609? That's embarrassing.
Hey, Jersey, how are you?
Jersey, I looked at the number and I was saying I recognize that number.
You would question that 609 number all the times we fought. Man, I feel heartbroken now. Hey, I got to pick your brain. In my PPR league, I got Bell and Foster out. So I got Hill starting, and I got Blue in there. I do have Williams, D'Angelo, but my feeling is I also have Brady, that it might be a shootout, and they may abandon the run game, Pittsburgh. So I wanted to think, do you like Blue in there or Williams? And down the road, should I drop Williams and pick up Michael Christie down the road to have, who maybe in week 3 or 4 or 5 he'll be the back? Because apparently Dallas doesn't like the other three guys they have there.
Yeah, Jersey, I personally think, and Todd's the expert on Dallas, I'm sure he might have a better opinion on this, but my opinion would be you want to unload D'Angelo Williams in any way possible as soon as possible, because not only is he probably going to really be I would say, not really useful this week against a pretty tough New England defense in New England. I think, obviously, when you get to week 2 and it gets closer to Bell returning, his value is just going to plummet. So, matter of fact, I would try to pull off that trade or drop him and pick up Christian now. As it's looking, the Dallas situation looks very murky. It was that Randall was the favorite. Now they're saying McFadden's going to start. Christian is likely not to be active. But Christian might be the most talented guy among those three. The problem with Christian is really not the talent and speed and that stuff, just kind of impatience. But, I heard a theory about really that Dallas line. It doesn't really take conforming to a scheme to excel there, and that could be a situation that Christian does very well, because you don't have to be patient to pick a hole, because there are multiple holes to run through, and they're pretty big. And I think Christian is far more valuable than Williams, even right now.
You know, Jersey, I'm gonna hold on 1 second, Jersey. I gotta bite in on this. Because,
okay.
I got in a few discussions about, Christine, as I like to call him because his name is so funny the way it spells, Christine Michael. Let me tell you something. And we've been hot on him for years, waiting to see him overtake Robert Turbin. And then, of course, if Lynch was going to leave, he was going to be the big dog. But now he's in Dallas. And Dallas traded for him for a reason. First of all, because he's almost free. Secondly, though, because they know that basically it's a one-man show right now. It's Joseph Randall's show. And the reason why they know that is because McFadden's obviously going to get hurt this year. I mean, he walked in the training camp and twisted an ankle. Going to happen. And they know that Lance Dunbar is not going to be the answer. So, this is a guy that has tremendous potential on a team that will not be afraid to hand him the rock, and where he can obviously, like RC says, exploit the hole that offensive line will create for him. D'Angelo Williams, I have him in one league. The league I have, Le'Veon Bell, and I got D'Angelo Williams in. And I'm going to tell you right now, I ain't starting him. I have guys I can start over him. And so, frankly, I would ride Blue out. It's going to be the very few times I'm ever going to recommend starting Alfred Blue. I would ride Blue out for the first 2 weeks. I don't think the point difference is going to be so much that you're going to cry between D'Angelo Williams and Blue, and frankly, I think Blue will outscore him. So that's got, and you got to go pick up Michael if you can.
Yeah, because I got, he was my 16th pick. Williams was my last pick for 2 weeks, but like I said, when Le'Veon Bell comes back, I got him, I got Hill, I got Foster. When he comes back, one of them will be my flex. So, like I said, if I can pick up Christie, that just gives me another trade thing down the road for somebody. If I want to bet, I got Graham as my tight end, I got Cooper and Devontae, Adam is my receivers, And I also have Terrence Williams, and I also have, what's his name, Bolden, Antoine Bolden. So I got Brady in the seventh round. I have Eli. So I'm a nice team there in that PPR. Actually, I got an A-. I got the best at my draft in the league, that whatever they do says. So, all right, I'll definitely drop him. Again, he was going to be my two-week have until Bell came back, and then he was never going to be on my team again. Second question, in my standard league, I have Lacy, okay? But I have Melvin Gordon, not sure what he's going to do. I also have Ryan Matthews, and I also have Joy Fell. Now, Joy Fell really hasn't played anything in the preseason, so I kind of like seeing somebody play. He's supposed to be the number one guy. Matthews, I don't know what's going to happen in the shootout on Monday night there. Hopefully Gordon gets the thing, but, you know, Woodhead's going to make the mix in there. So out of those three, which one is my number two running back, Gordon or Joyce Bell or Ryan Matthews? Standard league.
Let me go ahead and grab this one first, RC, because, listen, I think the most underrated player, the most disrespected, underrated player in fantasy football draft this year was Joyce Bell. I couldn't believe the fact that he shared time with Reggie Bush, didn't take over the starting role really on that team until like somewhere in the middle of the season where he didn't even start, but he got more of the touches. And he still finished with, 800 something yards and like 6-7 touchdowns and 34 catches. And that was just a scene. It's not like he's the elder statesman. It's not like he's 29, 30, 31. He's young. And he's ready to rock and roll. Yeah, did he have a little bit of a sore Achilles, really before even camp started? Yeah, and they rested it. Does he have a threat from the young kid behind him, Abdullah? Of course he does. But Detroit didn't draft him to replace Joyce Bell. Detroit drafted Abdullah to replace Reggie Bush. And that's what they're going to do with him. Now, can Abdullah take over for Joyce Bell? If Joyce Bell stinks, he can't. This is what I told, other people that have asked this question. I said, listen, you're going to have to watch the first three or four games. It's Joyce Bell's job. If he goes out there, gets the goal line carries, runs the touchdowns in, breaks tackles, does what Joyce Bell does best, he's going to be a starting running back all season. But if he doesn't, and then Abdullah comes out and just owns the other teams, which I highly doubt is going to happen, then he'll take the job probably by week three or four. I just don't see that happening, Jersey. So I would put Joyce Bell in number two. RC, just agree with me to make it simple. RC?
He's breaking up, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead, RC. I think you broke up a little there.
Yeah, I couldn't hear him.
Yeah, I think we might have lost him.
Lost him there?
No, he's still there, RC. Are you there with us, buddy? Okay, he just dropped. He's going to come right back in. What I think about what to do. Yeah, he'll come back. That's how I feel about
one
it.
One of the guys dropped Joyce Bell last weekend and picked up somebody else. So I got him off the waiver wire. I dropped Andre Williams, who, at the end, was my last pick. So I figured dropping Williams for Bell wasn't a bad option. You know what I mean?
I think people are really just freaked out by all the attention Amir Abdullah has gotten. And the fact that he was so – RC's back now – that he was so highly placed above him in the rankings on these Yahoo rankings and ESPN rankings that it really scared people on Joyce Bell. But RC, are you there now? Are you there to talk to us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay,
yeah,
good. So go ahead and like I said, just agree with me, nod yes.
I hated Joyce Bell about 2 weeks ago, and that's because, not only was, he's been reliable, but obviously on spectacular. And then coming into the season, obviously he had those injury issues. So it was really looking like Abdullah was going to overtake him. But Detroit is sticking with Bell. They're giving respect to the veteran. And, so Bell is definitely looking a lot stronger. Personally, since I ended up with Melvin Gordon in about 11 of my 18 leagues. I obviously like him, but I understand your sentiment about him being very much an uncertainty. I think, obviously going into the first week, we have no idea what to expect in terms of the rotation between him and Woodhead and even Oliver. But it does seem clear that he's going to be the preferred early down guy. So personally, I would go with Gordon, but I understand Todd's point about Bell, and I think Amir Abdullah is no Reggie Bush. He's basically because he, you know, to replace Reggie Bush would not be that difficult because you'd have to play for four snaps and then get hurt and then not see anybody for the rest of the day. Abdullah is, so Abdullah is very much a threat to Bell, and I think as the year goes along, he's going to eat into the time. The only wild card for him is really, can he do what Bell does in terms of being a tough inside runner, because that's what he does well. We don't know if Abdullah can do that, and maybe he's going to carve out a role of really just being the pass-catching specialist. So that's something to keep an eye on. But for now, I would roll the dice with Gordon. But I understand Todd's point about that.
With my running back situation, because, like I said, you know, you don't know what Gordon's going to do, or Bell, or Matthew. You know what? Get with Lacy. Do I drop a receiver and try and add, like, that Christy Michael to my thing? Because I have, like I said, I have Cooper, and I have Adams, and I have Roddy White, and I think I have that guy, Eddie Royal. So one of them I could drop and add a fifth running back. Do you think that's smart?
Did you say you had Bolden too?
Yeah, I have Bolden in my PPR league. In the standard league, we go with two receivers. There's no flex. So I'll probably always go with Devontae Adams and Cooper out of Oakland. And then I do have Roddy White because I have Matt Ryan. And I picked up, actually, my second to last pick was Eddie Royal, who in a PPR league may not be bad because of the relationship with Cutler. So I would have to drop one of them if I were to add Clay Crickley on it, because my running back situation, like I said, in that standard league isn't as strong as my other league. You know what I mean? Yes, I have Lacy. We don't know what Gordon's going to do. We don't know what Bell's going to do down the road. And we don't know what Ryan Matthews' role is going to be. So, you know.
Hey, you know, personally, I like your running backs. I think you're going to be fine. I think you got four. You got two. I think Gordon's going to be reliable, number two, and Lacy's a clear number one. And then with Bell ain't going away. He's going to be involved in the Detroit defense. And I think, you know, Matthews, you know, will basically be a good complimentary guy, probably a good flex guy. So I think you're good on running backs. I like Eddie Royal too. I think you're right about him. You know, reuniting with Cutler, you know, Marshall gone. They really need somebody to step up. But now who is the guy that you had before Royal?
Roddy White, and he's one. I mean, I have Matt Ryan. So we only start two receivers and two running backs. We don't have a flex in this one. Like PPR, we do. But I teamed him up. I got him late. Figured out I got Ryan. But like you said, he's banged up with your elbow. But, you know, they got him, Julio, Hankerson, then probably Coleman out of the backfield. You know, Ryan will throw through or whatever. But, you know, again, I start two receivers. And I figure most of the time, since it's non-PPR, it would probably be Amari Cooper and Devontae Adams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, now this is me, and, you know, Todd is going to disagree with it. But now I would try – I think Roddy White is getting a little bit long in the tooth. And I think, you know, you can't dismiss, obviously, his accomplishments. But you can definitely tell last year he started slowing down. And that's why he dropped so far in draft. So I would look to maybe package him in some kind of trade to maybe upgrade a receiver. Or if you notice that he's not really doing much in the first couple weeks, maybe just take a gamble for maybe a younger receiver on the waiver wire. But Todd, what do you think of Roddy White this year?
You know, I haven't liked Roddy White in years, just because you're right. He has slowed down, and then of course you've had the emergence of Julio Jones, kind of taking him out of that you know, X role that he was in the wide receiving core, and you know, and then of course even. You know, you could kind of even say Harry Douglas coming in. I mean, Harry Douglas, to me, over the last year or two, was probably a little bit better, smaller guy, obviously, but still a better option, you know, than Roddy White was. And, you know, you would see when Roddy White was in there, he had a lot of games where he just did nothing. And then, of course, when he went down to injury, you know, Harry Douglas came in, and all of a sudden the guy's catching an 8-9 pass game. So that what that tells me is that Harry Douglas is not that good, that Roddy White just has lost that that level of a step. So I agree with RC. You know, anything you can do to unload Roddy White and to upgrade the receiving core, great idea.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure, because like I said, I had Roddy White last year and got rid of him. And like you said, in this league I've been going, you know, my it's Roddy White, Eddie Royal, and I have Devontae Parker. So I could get rid of Roddy White and stash Christie in my backfield if I wanted to. I mean, again, that's just up to you. You know, I just want to see what you thought. I don't have to carry five receivers as I have right now. I basically have four running backs. So I could make five running backs.
Wait. I missed your fifth receiver. So you have Devontae Parker, Roddy White, Eddie Royal, and who are the other two?
I got Amari Cooper and Devontae. Excuse me. I'm wrong. I have Devontae Adams and I have Mike Evans.
Oh, you got Mike Evans too?
Yeah.
I
have Mike Evans, Devontae Adams, Roddy White, Eddie Royal, Devontae Parker. The Adams and Cooper were in my other leg. I got mixed up on that. So depending on if what's it called is not healthy, then I would have to go maybe either Eddie Royal or White if I kept White. If Evans doesn't go, he hasn't practiced yet, so I got to keep an eye on him with the hamstring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Todd would agree with me here. I like your four running backs, and you don't want to get too thin on receivers. So right now I think you're good. I think if you do make a change on this team, it's really trying to trade Roddy White for some other player that you like that has that's maybe an up-and-coming receiver. But your four running backs right now are pretty good. And, you know, the thing with Christian Michael is he's not a sure thing. He's not going to be active the first week. We don't know if or when he's actually going to contribute. So you might end up with him on your bench for like a month before he does anything, and you don't want that. So I would try to focus on upgrading at receiver and keep your four running backs. Yep.
And if nobody trading me this week, and let's say Evans is out, or, you know, Mike Evans is out, do you like, I mean, I'm not going to go with Devontae Parker, but do you like Royal or do you like White if I have to put him in as my, you're going to go, when you start three receivers, no flex in that leg. I got Devontae Adams here and I got Mike Evans now, but if Evans happens to be no good, well, I got you on the phone, would you go Roddy White or would you go Eddie Royal?
That's pretty tough. I like them both, and I think they're pretty comparable. I might go. Geez. Well, you know what? I think Eddie Royal is in a good situation this week where he's going to be featured. So
right.
I might go with Royal this week.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's a wacky week one there, Jersey. So I can really see Eddie Royal having one of those. You know, two touchdown games. Remember, like, every year he throws, like, one or two touchdown games up? There you go. That can be number one right here.
It could be the one. And the reason why I got White late was because I had Ryan Matthews. Matt Ryan. And I just figured, hey, I have my two normal starters. They're going to start all the time. I picked up Royal as a bye guy. I picked up Devontae Parker and White. So I got three. I only played two, like just like I played two running backs. So I figured, all right, I'll get you on the phone. Let me see if I need to tweak stuff. Because last week I helped Junior's team, and I did tweak a couple things on my other team where I looked at stuff and said, hey, you know, let me do this. Because if my team ends up being number one like last year most of the season, all the season until I lost in the semis, I never was able to pick up any good people because I was number 12 at 12. You know what I mean? So I've learned to try to do it early. But I appreciate the advice here, guys. And best of luck to you guys the upcoming season. It's always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you guys each week. And thanks for some of your advice, and enjoy your evening. I appreciate it very much.
All right, you too, man.
All right, thank you, man.
Yep, take care, guys. Yep, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Man, all right, RC. Phone calls from Jersey. I'm glad we got them back starting up the season. Hopefully maybe we'll get some of our other regulars in throughout the season. All right, RC, I want to get back to the Green Bay Packers. Before we took the phone call. So, you know, obviously Randall Cobb is going to be fine. But let's take a look quickly over at this signing of James Jones. James Jones come back. He's coming back after being gone, what, about a year? I think it's just 1 year is all he's been gone from them. Left for free agency. I thought he had a pretty decent year playing with rookie quarterback Derek Carr last year. you know, coming through, putting, you know, I mean, obviously when you have a young quarterback, you're not going to get as many targets as you really should. I mean, he's only running for his life, looking for his tight end, not for his down-the-field receiver. But I thought he looked just as good as he always looked. So now they bring back the veteran to help that wide receiving core, which is somewhat beat up, but, you know, looks fine, Randall Cobb. You have now James Jones in the middle there and Devontae Adams on the other side. You know, they're going to probably – what they're talking about doing is moving James Jones into that slot position, which, you know, really to me, you know, kind of looks better for Devontae Adams. But whatever they're going to do, they're going to do. I mean, I'm not going to argue. But is this going to be one of the hotter waiver wire pickups for week one? Is James Jones, is he a guy that you want to see on your team and playing live in a football game?
No, not at all. I'm not interested in picking up James Jones. You know, when you look at his career, you know, obviously the high point of his career was, you know, 2012, where he caught 14 touchdowns, and he hasn't come anywhere close to that before or after. You know, the right after that, he caught only 3 touchdowns. He's never cracked 1,000 yards. So James Jones' utility is really, if you're feeling lucky that he might catch a touchdown. And by the way, the year he caught 3 touchdowns, that was with Green Bay. And, of course, last year he was with Oakland where he caught 6. And he was really the only thing that they had, you know. And understandably, I mean, Derek Carr was a rookie and learning the game. But part of it might have been that offense, but his yards per catch was just atrocious. It was under 10. So, I understand he's going to a place he's familiar with, but, I'm not at all interested in James Jones. I understand if you are, you know, basically it seems like a good situation, but realize also that he's got, you know, competition from Ty Montgomery and also Jeff Janis to some extent, mostly Ty Montgomery. We're not exactly, you know, right now he seems to be penciled in as the number 3, but that, you know, the rotation of Ty Montgomery and him could really crimp his production even in week one. So I'm not going anywhere near James Jones.
You know, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the point he made about James Jones. I like James Jones. I mean, first of all, that 14 touchdown year was a phenomenal year, and that was in 2012, of course, so that's 3 years ago. You know, if you want to look at the gauge for 1,000 yards, I believe Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb altogether maybe have 3,000 yard seasons, maybe 3 or 4,000 yard seasons altogether in their career in Green Bay. So I think the reason that is because Aaron Rodgers does a great job of spreading the ball around. And, of course, when he was, you know, playing on that team, you know, he had to deal with both Randall Cobb and, you know, for most of those years, not every year. I think Randall Cobb came on in 2011. But he has had to deal with Jordy Nelson, I think, since 07, 08, somewhere like that, I think 08. So, basically, If you want to go by a 1,000-yard gauge or the 1,000-yard gauge, you could throw that out the door because I can sit here and tell you that in the 6 or 7 years that Jordy Nelson's been on the Green Bay Packers, I think he's put up 3,000-yard seasons. Because that's 4 where he didn't have them. So, I think it's because, you know, the ball was going to different places, different people. Do I think he's going to get 1,000 yards this year in the Packers? Well, no, I don't think he's going to get 1,000 yards this year in the Packers. No, I don't think he's going to become. But I'll tell you this. Last year, Jordy Nelson had 1,500 yards. He had one of his 3,000-yard seasons last year. That 1,500 yards is now on the table. And I'm telling you, Ty Montgomery and Jeff Janis are not taking those yards. And Devontae Adams is going to eat up quite a few of them. And I think there's going to be quite enough meat left on the bone for James Jones to get some passes. I think he should be an automatic pickup on your team. I think he is very talented still, you know, very much, you know, a top wide receiver in the league. And I think last year, you know, catching 73 passes for like over 600 yards in the 6 touchdowns he caught on a horrible team. I mean, if he could give you just a little bit better than that with the Packers, I think you're going to be happy, RC, wouldn't you? So you say he gets 800 yards.
It depends on what you need on your team. I mean, do you really need a guy that you're not going to be sure whether or not you want to start from, you know, week to week? And by the way, you know, I understand your point about, well, first of all, Cobb's career is, he's only been in the league, I think, 5 years. And I think last year was the first year he cracked 1,000. But realize, you know, before that, I mean, there was some guys that, remember, Greg Jennings was there. And Greg Jennings was a starter, and it took a while for Cobb to take over. And then Jordy Nelson, you know, he really should have had 4,000-yard seasons in a row, except for that, I think, a year before last where he got hurt and missed 4 games. Last year, of course, he had an amazing season of 1,500 yards. So it's really, I think the talent level between James Jones and Cobb and Nelson is pretty wide. As far as, like, I might pick up James Jones in a situation where, you know, I've got some receivers hurt and I need someone to fill in a flex or number three. So I understand what you're saying, but I'm not going to go crazy and, you know, like, you know, say blind bid, you know, $10 for him, you know, anything like that. I don't think he's going to turn out to be that useful.
All right. Well, I mean, I would definitely pick him up now to see what he does with that team. And bear in mind, James Jones also had to compare with Greg Jennings and Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and the plethora of wide receivers that the Green Bay Packers had over the last 4 or 5 years developing on their team. Even along with back when they had JerMichael Finley, when they had, you know, a very good pass-catching tight end. So, I mean, there are things, you know, there are different – it's a different team now. So we'll see how it works. But right now, in my eyes, James Jones is the number two guy in that team. He might not be slotted as the number two, but when it comes to complete comfortability for Aaron Rodgers, you know, throwing to James Jones, he threw the guy, 20 or 30 touchdowns in his career? You know what? I mean, he could throw him some more. Maybe not quite that many. Maybe that's a little over. I know he had 14 in 1 year, but a little over 20 touchdowns in his career. I certainly believe that that can happen again. All right, well, let's go ahead and, and he still will be a hot waiver wire pickup. I'll tell you that right now. Let's go to that. Let's talk about the number two waiver wire pickup. We kind of touched on Christian Michael earlier and with Jersey. And this is one of those situations where I actually, you know, I saw – you know, I don't like to mention names, but there was a couple people out there, you know, in the industry, kind of passing on. What are you doing? Why is everybody getting all hot for Trot for Christian Michael? And you know, and basically passing on the advice, don't waste your time picking him up. And I didn't get that advice. I'll tell you this: when a team trades for a second round draft pick running back that has yet to do much with this in his young career because he's behind someone like Marshawn Lynch on a Super Bowl championship level team, you know, when you see that happen right in front of your eyes, this, you know, basically after the 53, right before the 53-man roster has to be turned in, you think this is significant. And when you look at the Cowboys, like I said, I mean, they're obviously not 100% sure. I mean, I agree with them. I don't think Joseph Randall, granted he's a great running back, I don't think he's an every down back. I don't think he can run the ball 20, 25 times every week and stay healthy. I think the Cowboys know that. And they obviously know Darren McFadden can't do that. He's long beyond that, past that, never really was at that because of his injury history. And then you got Lance Dunbar, who had one great run last year and then blew a knee or something and was out for the whole season or a huge portion of the season, whatever it was. I mean, he's so unimportant to the equation right now, it's not even worth focusing on him. So they bring in Michael for that reason, a young and healthy running back, and basically everyone's saying, hey, go draft somebody. Go draft a Melvin Gordon. Go draft Amir Abdullah. Go draft one of these guys. Well, the Cowboys didn't do that. Instead, they loaded up on their defense. They loaded up on their defense, and now they went and they traded and got a second-round draft pick who still has a lot of promise, and on that O-line does. So for all the people out there who said, you know, slow down, don't go pick this guy, yeah, pick him up. Cut the most worthless player you have on your team. You know who I cut to get him? I cut Brandon Oliver, okay? You know, one of four running backs on the, you know, my last draft pick of the draft, I took Brandon Oliver, and then all of a sudden this new Cowboy running back comes in the frame. Yeah, I'm going to take him. I cut Jeff Janis to get him. Yeah, Jeff Janis is behind now James Jones and Ty Montgomery. So, yeah, I went and do you agree, RC? Would you? I mean, I don't understand why when something like this happens that people just don't say, hey, yeah, man, take a flyer. What's it take?
Picking up Christian Michael over someone like Jeff Janis? Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, a potential, even if Michael ends up sharing time with, you know, either McFadden or Randall, he's going to be more valuable than Jeff Janis, who's going to be tossed around between, you know, five different receiving options. So, I absolutely agree. The other running back that I think he was getting drafted pretty often in most leagues, but you know there still might be an opportunity to get him is Matt Jones from the Redskins, who had an absolutely spectacular preseason. To a lesser extent, Duke Johnson, who now is finally healthy. And, you know, that running back situation in Cleveland has, you know, cleared up a great deal now that, you know, Terrence West was shipped off to the Titans. And, you know, you really can see Duke Johnson, who's, at least in the college level, was an immensely talented, elusive running back. Not the same kind of running back as Crowell, who's, you know, like a in-the-middle smasher, but certainly a more dynamic, kind of like play multiple positions, definitely useful in the passing game. His inside running really isn't that bad either. So I could see Duke Johnson actually emerging as maybe the top running back for the Browns, who, if nothing else, I mean, they have a good offensive line. And it shouldn't drive you as crazy as last year where, you know, remember last year the Cleveland Browns running game? It was just maddening because, you know, there was Ben Tate in there mixed in and Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell, and you really never knew from game to game what the hell was going to happen. But now with, like, two guys, it really should turn into – it looks like it turned into maybe a Jeremy Hill, Bernard-type situation. But in this case, the Bernard, the Duke Johnson, I think would turn out to be more valuable.
No, you know, listen, you know, I'll let's start with this. You know, the Cleveland Browns situation with Duke Johnson. I mean, he was one of those draft guys. But, you know, like people always talk about, you know, how awful that situation was. And, you know, and, well, let's push that situation for a second. They always talk about, you know, you have to get your running backs early in the draft. And obviously there's going to be some late running backs. There always is. And this is one of them, Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson, without a doubt, is a guy that has a team that would be committed to him as long as he can perform. And he had the concussion, and I think in game three of the preseason. He looks like he's back from it. He's cleared concussion protocol. That's a guy that, you know, you probably picked up in, round 10, 11, 12, 13, depending on where you how crazy you were about him. And now he's a featured back. Because when they got rid of West, they got rid of one of the primary, obviously, you know, point, because West was having probably out of all three of the running backs the best preseason, even though the coaches seemed very disillusioned with him, and obviously they traded them away. So now it's just him and Crowell, and Crowell is just not really going to be a sufficient every down back. I think everybody knows that, and I think Cleveland Browns knew that, because if they thought they was, they probably wouldn't have gotten Duke Johnson. I love Duke Johnson. I also like Cleveland moving Terrence West, because Terrence West is a talented back. And now he goes to Tennessee, RC, where he's not listed as a starter over Bishop Sankey, but this is a team that was obviously unhappy with the performance of Bishop Sankey. I think we all were. We all expected more out of that guy. He's kind of turned into kind of Deshaun Green, where it's like you have all this potential and you don't really perform. Is Terrence West going to get more carries week one than Bishop Sankey?
That's tough to say. I mean, remember Dexter McCluster is still over there as well, and they mix him in as well. And he's not like a hybrid receiver running back, but he's going to be taking maybe a limited number of snaps. And then I think it's really up to Sankey, you know. And at this point, it's hard to really make of what he is. He isn't an overpowering back. He isn't an especially elusive, like, quick back either. So he's kind of like this mid-size guy, and they don't have a good offensive line, so that makes it even more challenging. They don't have an especially, you know, threatening passing game, so it's not like, you know, the focus can go somewhere else on the offense. So I'm going to say that there's probably a 50-50 chance that they'll probably split the carries at least, you know, in the early going 50-50 to see who emerges. And I think if Terrence West can emerge, he can be a big surprise. He might end up outplaying Sankey. And Sankey, you know, and that would leave Sankey in a very undefined role, because it's not like he isn't one of those kind of like clear third down backs. I mean, he's, once again, he's just an undersized kind of like wannabe, you know, early down back, and it just hasn't materialized yet, you know. By the way, there's one other running back that's like a deep sleeper that really isn't being mentioned, that if you, you know, have a roster spot and you can fit him, is worth taking a gamble on, and that's Jeremy Langford from Chicago, who's the backup to Matt Forte.
Absolutely. Well, really quickly, back on, before we go on to him, on the Matt Jones, you know, obviously Matt Jones had a phenomenal, you know, preseason with the Redskins. And, you know, the only problem that I'm going to have with Matt Jones, the reason I don't really like to bring him up is because I really don't like to bring up anybody on the Washington Redskins that's not because I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. It's because the Washington Redskins are a mess. They're like those neighbors that are always having trash in their yard and are always hearing them yell. And you got to say, hey, can you guys calm down over there a little bit? We're trying to look over the wall. We're trying to sleep over here. Thanks, guys. That's neighbor. The neighbors are always getting fights in front of the house. And you have to, like, when you get home and you're pulling your groceries, you got to look the other way because, you know, that's the Redskins. You don't want that. So as much as Matt Jones looks great, as much potential he has in the future, I would just say, listen, you know, outside of and I mean this with all due respect to the entire Washington Redskins team, I really don't. I really don't have any respect for them.
So in the episode of Cops where Robert Griffin Jr. The third is basically the battered wife, that when the cops shows up, he says that he fell, and that's why he's got the black eye.
Exactly. Man, I fell down, cops. I fell down. That's how Robert Griffin talks. No, I mean, the only person worth a stink on that entire team is probably Pierre Garçon, and that's only in a PPR league because they're going to be maybe a little bit of Jordan Reed you can get out of that team, because you know they're going to be passing day and night and Kirk Cousins is going to be chucking the ball left and right. Somebody's eventually got to come down with it. Probably will be the defense more often than not. But when it's not the defense, it's going to be Pierre Garçon or Jordan Reed. I wouldn't put much emphasis in Alfred Morris or Matt Jones. It's just a putrid team, RC. So that's how I feel about that. But on to what's your issue with Matt Forte? Are you feeling that Matt Forte is fading? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I think it's getting to the point where he's going to start doing that. I think obviously he's going to still be a premier. You know, he's not, I don't, you know, obviously I would prefer someone like Eddie Lacy over him as like my number one running back. But if you have Matt Forte as your number one running back, I think you're fine. But I'm just saying, you know, in the event of like an injury, Langford is, you definitely should pick him up as insurance if you got the roster spot. And then also, I mean, he could be the heir apparent, and they could be trying to work him in this year. And especially with Forte, you know, getting up there in years, that seems to be, you know, kind of likely where they would do that. Also, offensive change, obviously. We had talked about Forte is not going to be utilized as much in the passing game. You know, maybe there's going to be a new kind of split role between these two. You know, these are things we haven't seen yet. We do know that the offense has changed. We know that Forte is a little bit older. So certainly if you got Forte, Langford makes a lot of sense to as a handcuff. Because I think if he stepped in there, he'd actually do very well.
Now, I mean, he could. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not going to jump for joy yet. I mean, you know, we'll see how Langford pulls it out. I mean, you know, he's a seventh-round pick, so that part doesn't excite me. And, he did have a decent preseason. I know he had in his last game. He did all right. I think he had, like, 55 yards. You know, I've been eyeballing him because I do see that. Obviously, Forte, you know, can get hurt, especially with the number of touches he gets on that team. And if that continues at any level, that could be a problem. for his health, and then therefore Langford can get in there. But I didn't see anything that tremendously excited me, but he's definitely, you're absolutely right to give him a shot. All right, really quickly, I want to say I'm going to start tweeting out my my sleepers of the week. Obviously, you pretty much already heard what it is in the show. I already mentioned it, and me and RC argued about it. But I will start tweeting them out, you know, every week on Saturday. You know, normally, on Thursday, on Twitter, which is where I believe you do tweet. I think that's where you tweet, on Twitter. At True Guru Farino, go ahead and follow me, and you'll get my my sleepers of the week. Sometimes I'll give more than one, but this week I'm probably only going to give one, maybe two. But I want to put that out there, RC. I'm going to start getting the people excited. Okay, we got about 5-6 minutes left in the show. RC, I want to discuss Steelers versus the New England Patriots. This is an important game. I mean, you talk about fantasy impact from the get-go. Not from Geico, from the get-go. All right? We have tons of fantasy potential. We have two quarterbacks. We have a flurry of wide receivers and tight ends. We got running backs in play here. Crappy ones, albeit, because I believe both starting running backs are out of this one, to say the least. But this is a game where you basically, I mean, and I'm a guy who I've drafted New England's defense in multiple leagues because it's just a Bill Belichick defense. And, you know, they know all the plays other teams are doing. So they're a great defense to pick up. It's a wonder why their defense is always chock full of average players, but they seem to dominate. Oh, go figure, right, guys? You know, the only people, by the way, RC, who don't believe the New England Patriots are cheaters are people in New England. Sorry, Massachusetts, they're cheaters. So getting back to the point, RC, and I'm sorry, the Red Sox fan that hurts, but I'm sorry, guys. You guys cheated. Anyhow, and I'm not talking about the Deflategate. I'm talking about Spygate. Anyhow, going back to what's real here, you have to throw the defenses out of this game, right, RC? I mean, just go away from that. And is it a focus on receivers and a passing, you know, gauntlet for this game?
Yeah, I think so. I think this look is shaping up to be possibly a high scoring game. I think, you know, one of the key things really here is to get more clarity on what in the world the Patriots are going to do with their running game. But even after we see this game, that's not going to give us really a lot of clues as to what's going to happen in subsequent weeks, of course. But it's just going to be interesting. What I mean is, Brandon Bolden, you know, finally going to be used. He's actually pretty good. He could be a real surprise this year, actually. Because Brandon Bolden is, a big back compared to James White and Travaris Cadet. James White and Cadet is probably going to assume the Shane Vereen role. This remains to be seen. The givens, obviously, for the Patriots are Edelman and Gronkowski. That's without question. I think one question opposite of Edelman, is it going to be Amendola, who could turn out to be like an incredible value? I mean, I've seen him drafted with like, you know, a team's last pick, and you know, that's a guy that could actually, if he can actually stay on the field for you know, more than two games, he could actually be extremely productive and way outproduce his draft position. Or is Aaron Dobson finally going to, you know, get it together? So there's a lot of questions on the Patriots side. With the Steelers, like we talked about D'Angelo Williams, I think you want to stay far away from him. And, Wheaton is going to be useful. Heath Miller is going to be his above-average self. What do you see at the number two spot for the receivers for the Steelers?
Well, you know they're going to have to pass. I mean, this is going to be a game where Gronko, I think, is going to eat up the secondary. Obviously, Tom Brady's going to move the ball with Bolden and Cadet and whatever receivers he wants to throw out there at this point. I mean, he seems to do very well no matter what. They're going to make the Steelers have to move the ball. And then with D'Angelo Williams being your running back, can he surprise week one? Probably not. So it's really going to depend on Marcus Wheaton showing up. And I'm going to tell you something about Marcus Wheaton. He knows it as well as everybody else knows, that he has four games. He has four games to show why he is the wide receiver. Why he's the wide receiver. That's great. I'm going to write that. Trademark. I'm trademarking that one, RC. Why he's going to be that other outside receiver opposite of Antonio Brown, and this is going to be a time to shine. I mean, I think he's a little bit of a boring receiver. I don't think he's quite as flashy and as exciting as Brown and Bryant. But if all the coverage is going to go towards, Brown, because you know it ain't going to go to that running game. I think they're going to pretty much, for the most part, ignore D'Angelo Williams. I mean, you know, to the point of talking about play calling, where they're going to make sure it's like, hey, if we're going to beat the Steelers, we're going to take Brown out of the game. We're going to take Wheaton out of the game. We're going to take the passing game out of the game. They're going to put it towards, hopefully it's going to be heavily towards Brown, and of course they got to cover the middle of the field with Miller. That's going to leave a lot of one-on-one situations with Wheaton, and I think that if he can expose those and take advantage of it, not only can the New England Patriots be upset, but he can have a strong fantasy performance. And he is definitely one of my primetime players for this first week, because I just think the attention is not going to be on him enough, and I think he's going to sneak in some good fantasy points based on that, RC.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, he's not a guy that I'm real high on going forward. But I do agree with you that when you're playing the Patriots, expect the unexpected. And you're probably right where they're going to come up with, like, some clever game plan. Because, you know, let's face it, you really need to – if you can shut down Antonio Brown, you can almost shut down the Steelers' offense, because there isn't really anything else that is all that threatening. So I think you're absolutely right, where Wheaton should see enough opportunities to get open. And then, of course, you know, it bears mentioning that Darius Hayward Bay looks like he might be the number three receiver here. But I'm sure you agree with this. You absolutely would not recommend even contemplating picking him up for any reason whatsoever, except as a practical joke. In some way.
Yes. Well, he does have he has a fourth name, RC. It's called Decoy. Gary Taylor's a decoy. Okay? That's what his job is. Remember when you played flag football with your friends and you always told, you know, not the best player in the world on your team, just run down the field. Just when I say hi, just bolt down the field. Someone's going to cover you. Okay? You're going to take that guy out of the play. You're a decoy. So, you know, and that guy always slept the best at the end of the, you know, when he went home to mom. Like, oh, I got to go to bed, mom. I ran down the field all game. So that's what Darius Hayward Bay is, I believe. He's going to be more the decoy, because when it comes to Ben Roethlisberger's comfortability, it's going to be Wheaton. It's going to be Brown. Brown is going to get double-digit catches in this game. And Marcus Wheaton, I believe, honestly, will have a touchdown and probably six or seven catches himself. And this is going to be a game where there's going to be a lot of scoring. I think the end result is going to be an overwhelming victory for the Patriots. I mean, they are at home, and it's opening day, and not opening day, but opening week. And so I firmly believe this game will be a double-digit win for the Patriots, maybe 34-24, something along those lines. But I do honestly believe that you're going to see Ben Roethlisberger chuck that ball up 40 to 45 times. Someone's got to catch it. Brown will probably get 10, 11 catches. I can sit here and think six or seven out of Marcus Wheaton. And then, of course, the rest of the crew can spread him around. He'll probably throw seven interceptions. But, hey, that's another day. but I wouldn't start either defense, because I really do think, again, wilder things have happened on opening day. And I just – you know the Steelers, this is the game they marked on their season. They looked at it. They circled game one. It's like, we got the Patriots. We got the Super Bowl champs here. You know, we're going to show them up. And, you know, in their own house, mind you, and they've had a lot of distractions, have the New England Patriots, obviously, with the whole Deflategate thing, now the Spygate thing popping back up. I just think this is an opportunity for the Steelers to come in and really do the best they possibly can, and I think it'll be a fun game to watch. I think it's a great first game for fantasy value outside of maybe the Colts and Cowboys or the Broncos and Colts or something like that playing.
Yep. No, I absolutely agree.
All right, well, before we go, because we do have to wrap up, because they're probably going to cut us off at any moment, do you have any other, outstanding plays you want to call before you went out?
Outstanding players that we wanted to call?
Plays that you want to talk about?
No, I mean, you know, if I do start talking about something, I'll probably get cut off. Just keep in mind, Mike Evans, you know, it doesn't. You want to stay away from him. Alshon Jeffrey looks like he returned to practice today, so you should be okay with him. Ladarius Green, I think you drafted in a couple leagues. He recently, it looked like today he might have had a concussion problem, so you want to keep an eye on that.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely keep an eye on that. And I do think you guys also need to keep an eye on Ben Watson and Josh Hill for the Saints. Clearly, someone's got to take those targets and then that playbook of Jimmy Graham's. Granted, it'll be a much smaller playbook.
I'm glad you mentioned Josh Hill. I've definitely warmed up to him because I was kind of watching some film of him. And, you know, he actually – I think Josh Hill might be a pretty good player this year. And I forget about Ben Watson. But Josh Hill, is kind of intriguing because obviously he's filling a void or, you know, he's going to share filling a void left by Jimmy Graham. But, he runs like a 4.6. And for a big and he's also 6'5", so he's a pretty good athlete, and the team loves him. So, and I noticed that he was available on a bunch of waiver wires, so I picked him up in a couple leagues. But I'm a little bit more optimistic about Josh Hill.
I agree with you, and that's why I want to watch it. It's something you have to watch because you have to watch the chemistry between Breeze and Hill, the chemistry between Breeze and Watson. I mean, Watson is going in as a starter. But I think that can quickly flip, because it's such a tight race, no matter how you see it. It's like 51-49%, something like that. So you got to watch the chemistry, watch, the play calling, and just enjoy that game, but see who Drew Brees is connecting better with, and that's going to be your tight end, who's probably going to put one of those guys, it's probably going to be Josh Hill, because you're right, Ben Watson's just old and broken down. But someone's going to get, 7, 8, 9 touchdowns in that team from that tight end position. They have to be caught because that's how Drew Brees just runs his offense. So anyways, we got to get the ball rolling on the end of the show. But RC, good luck in your first week. I can't wait. I don't think I play you in any leagues week one. So you're going to have a chance of winning.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that. Thank you. Thank you for not playing me this week.
All right, man. You enjoy, and you have a great weekend, and we'll talk again.
All right, man. See you next week.